This week on TSR, our top story, Governor Abbott out with an unconstitutional executive order. Also, some happy news, Texas will remain rat-free for the foreseeable future. We'll tell you what that means. In our interview, we talked to Daniel Greer with Direct Action Texas about why Texans should be concerned about election integrity as we head into 2020. And we'll finish up with Dustin Sinski about how legislators aren't reading the bills they pass in this week's commentary. Welcome back, friends, to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios here in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. You can find me on Twitter if you want to follow my antics and commentary, at Tweet Tony Mac. The show goes out not just on radio, but also as a podcast. If you're not subscribed, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, all those good places. Now let's get the show started. I've got Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. And the big story this week, the top story, is Governor Abbott's, I would say, clearly unconstitutional executive order relating to the plumbing board. Suddenly plumbers. Every week we're talking plumbers. You
know, yeah.
Legal issue.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week. I mean, the situation you had. So as a matter of a recap here, you had the legislature having their sunset legislation essentially to extend the Texas State Board of Plumbing Examiners. This is the state agency that oversees plumbers across the state of Texas. Due to a little bit of back and forth and kind of in an accidental way, essentially, the bill doesn't pass the Texas House, okay? And the final days of session, not enough time to fix that. And so session ends with the now expectation that this State Board of Plumbing Examiners will actually be shut down.
And it's plumbing freedom.
Freedom. People are joking that they're going to start, they can't wait to start their plumbing ventures free from the heavy hand of government.
Everybody expects, like, hey, you know, it's going to be this interesting experiment over the next couple of years in plumbing freedom. A lot of us say these licensing regimes are not helpful. They don't actually protect consumers. We would have an experiment with that in the world of plumbing. It's what we expected. Governor Abbott taking extraordinary measures to put the brakes on that.
Exactly. And so you had the plumbers out there, their agency saying, please keep us regulated, because, of course, industries that are regulated by these occupational licensing love it because it's a barrier to entry from new people. So they're begging to be regulated. Well, Governor Abbott, a few days after this happened, says, hold on, I'm going to do something. Just stay tuned, but there won't be a special session for it.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, Governor Abbott, I guess they figured out how they were going to go about doing this. He issues an executive order extending the agency, but the reason why, or at least his justification for why he has the ability to do this, is because of Hurricane Harvey, the storm a couple years ago.
And we have this, I mean, literally it's saying, look, we have this emergency power in the law that says the governor can suspend laws in an emergency. We have a hurricane a couple of years ago. It doesn't have anything really particularly to do with plumbing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Clearly, transparently, a political play to do this extension of the agency without a special session. And we're justifying it under this disaster, you know, provision. This seems limitless.
Well, yes, and it caused a lot of Texans who saw this happen a lot of reaction from folks saying, "Whoa, wait a minute! Both people who want plumbers regulated, people who don't, and people who are just saying, if we're going to regulate plumbers, if we need to extend this agency, why can't the governor just call a special session to do it?" And we think of these special legislative sessions as something that's a big month-long, you know, ordeal with a bunch of stuff on the call. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, they could literally do this basically over the course of a weekend, just call them back, pass the bill,
There's a constitutional way to do this, except if there was a special session called, there would be tremendous pressure on the governor. Hey, you're putting plumbing on the call. Let's put election integrity on the call.
Yeah, Let's put pro-life reforms on the call. Let's put
pro-life reforms like we're seeing in other states on the call. All those pressures would be there. That seems to be the reason and the excuse to do this highly unconstitutional thing.
Yes, and you're exactly right. I think that they're afraid of calling a special session because they know that there's a lot of grassroots desire for a special session for, you know, a number of these priorities, you know, Texas Republican Party's priorities, basically none of them making it to the finish line. They're saying, hey, you're going to take extraordinary action. I saw one person say this on Twitter, like, the governor's taking extraordinary action to protect plumbers. Why doesn't he do this to protect life?
Yeah, protect babies. Yeah. Look, this is way more extreme than the things that are being debated about the president's executive mm-hmm. order on disasters and that sort of thing and the wall. Way more extreme. I just will have to keep an eye and see if there's any litigation that's filed to actually challenge this order.
Absolutely. We'll find out.
Next, let's turn and go to North Texas and talk with Aaron Anderson. Aaron, you've got some happy news that Texas, for the foreseeable future at least, will remain rat-free, as we like to say.
Well, that's right, Tony. Rat referring to the Ratliff clan. Thomas Ratliff, who lives out in Mount Pleasant, recently was in a runoff election for the mayor of that town, and he lost rather overwhelmingly by a 66-34% margin. And Thomas Ratliff, as those may not know, was a former State Board of Education member. His father, Bill Ratliff, who served in the Senate representing Mount Pleasant for 15 years, was the author of the controversial Robin Hood School Finance Plan back in 1993. Yeah, Thomas also has a brother, Bennett, who was a one-term member of the Texas House.
Yeah, these basically are the quintessential left-of-center Republicans in Texas. Bill Ratliff infamously once said he was a 51% Republican. He was just barely kind of sort of almost a little bit a Republican, elected as lieutenant governor for a very brief period of time when Rick Perry became governor, when Bush went to go be president. It served for a session there and with the support basically of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans. And so this family, they've been these liberal bastions on the Republican side, and they keep fading out of Texas. We celebrated a couple years ago when Thomas Ratliff was knocked off the State Board of Education. He had served on the State Board of Education despite being a lobbyist at the same time for Microsoft for their educational software. And so that had that conflict of interest. Well, we finally had a rat-free Texas, and it will remain a rat-free Texas for the foreseeable future. Now let's talk about this election. So who were the candidates and who was this candidate that defeated Thomas Ratliff there in Mount Pleasant?
Well, right. Well, real quickly, Tony, as you just alluded, Thomas Ratliff runs a lobbying firm, and he has for since the 1990s while he was in office and now again. But he was running against a gentleman named Tracy Craig, who is a retired Navy veteran and a Democrat. He had run in a Democrat primary previously for a Justice of the Peace position. So I guess what you have is a genuine Democrat against a Republican-branded Democratish type for a local nonpartisan office. And again, Ratliff, who's been a local hometown Mount Pleasant fixture for many years, soundly defeated in his bid.
Defeated 2-1. Well, that's happy news that we will remain rat-free for the next few years at least.
That's right, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Daniel Greer with Direct Action Texas. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
You know, I wanted to have you in. You guys are the experts when it comes to elections and election integrity in Texas. And I wanted to bring you in and talk about where we're at on that issue. I mean, we're headed into a dangerous election. I mean, the Democrats are coming in, trying to take over Texas, trying to change the nature of the country. This is a critical battleground headed into 2020. And I think I would be naive to be confident in our election integrity in this state, knowing what I know and knowing what you all have reported. So I wanted to touch base on that, where we're at in those reform efforts, what some of the dangers are, what needs to be done. So I guess big picture, should people be confident that their elections are being conducted accurately in this state?
So that's a big question, and you can go back to 2015 to get a better feel for where we are in this effort to firm up Texas' elections so that people have trust in the administrations and the outcomes that we're seeing. So in 2015, during the special legislative session, SB 5 passes. And SB 5 was actually the first substantial crack at reforming Texas' elections and cracking down on voter fraud that we had discovered and had been working to uncover for the last 3 years. SB 5 is the first push into reforming Texas elections, and what we see out of that is we see increased investigations, increased prosecutions of election fraud from the Attorney General's office, so much so that you've got an 80% uptick in prosecutions compared to the last 3 years.
We've seen a lot of these prosecutions around the state. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be a thing people would think, and this is really cynical, but people would think, oh, well, that's the kind of thing that goes on down in the valley. You know, that the counties that are bordering Mexico, there's corruption that just kind of boils over. We've got problems down there. But that's a problem over there, right? You know, for most Texans, that is in my backyard. But we've seen prosecutions in Dallas County, Tarrant County, you know, around the state, in the major population areas of the state, vote harvesting schemes uncovered by Direct Action Texas, where you basically have these schemes to steal the votes of the elderly to rig elections.
Yeah, it's happening all over the state. And so when we talk about, you know, I like to step back and look at the big picture. So I know that everybody wants to hone in on the session just 2019 and look at it and say, okay, where are we? Like, what did we get done during the session? Well, if you take a step back, in 2017, when SB 5 passes, we actually didn't have any traction during the regular session. It all came in the special session, and it was kind of a swing for the fences. So when you come into 2019 and say, okay, what are we working on this session? There was a lot more activity and a lot more interest in pushing for reform, I think, especially ahead of 2020, knowing the ramifications of the election, especially looking back at the 2018 general election and how and the inroads the Democrats made.
Well, but let's get
in
back
places
to,
like Tarrant.
Let's get back to my question. Mm-hmm. Should a voter out there be confident headed into the 2020 elections that things are going to be properly administered and counted in this state?
It's going to be important to put in work to make sure that we are confident in the results. So coming at
if the work isn't put in, then no.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially coming out of the session where we got lackluster results, not because there wasn't effort, but because there was effort in pushing back against those reforms.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen the left united against this. Now, I wanted to talk about it. We'll get back to the legislation and the things that were considered in the session if we have time, of course. But really, one of the critical issues is what's been going on in the Secretary of State's office and Governor Abbott's attempt to put an aggressive Secretary of State in there who would actually go about cleaning up our lists of voters, and you've seen a massive pushback from the organized professional left to try and crush those reform efforts. you know, basically to shield their efforts at voter fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. So in December of 2018, Governor Abbott appointed David Whitley to be Secretary of State. In his opening remarks to start the session, Whitley basically put front and center the fact that he was going to be working on shoring up Texas's elections so that we could have faith in their fair administrations and the outcome.
Yeah.
And then in late January, you have the rollout of a list maintenance effort focused on on non-citizens who are registered and voting in Texas elections, which, just in case you aren't aware, is happening. And we know that because during the fallout from this effort, the Secretary of State's office testified that because of this, non-citizens have come forward and self-identified and said, hey, I'm registered to vote. I didn't know I couldn't be. Please take me off the voter rolls. I'm not only registered to vote, but I have been voting. So we know that non-citizens are registered to vote and they are voting. You wouldn't think that based on the coverage from the left and the media after Secretary of State Whitley rolled out his list maintenance activity.
Yeah, and so basically we have this issue, and the way it seems to me, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, the way it looks to me is that you have all of these administrative tasks in terms of receiving applications to register to vote and administering the votes, counting the votes. Everything's treated as administrative as opposed to substantive. So the form comes in. No one really checks, hey, is this person really supposed to be registered to vote? Are they eligible to be registered to vote? They just, hey, I've got a card in front of me. Let me put them in the rolls. And they put them in there. And there's very little, you know, checking of the homework to ensure that registrations ought to be accepted. And so undoubtedly you have people who either knowingly or unknowingly, as you've said, who are voting in elections who shouldn't be voting in them.
Sure. Two things on that. So administratively, the mechanisms in code aren't in place to do that, which are some of the things that we had hoped to address this session via legislation. And then second, you'll have – this speaks to your point about not knowing. There would be parties that mail out forms that are pre-checked. So there's a check mark on the form that says, I'm a citizen. They'll pre-check it.
Yeah, the Democrats are sending these out saying, hey, pre-check it. You're a citizen, right? You know, so that's – but they're not. Right? That's actually an important question to ask of people who would be registering to vote. So we've got these people – I mean, large numbers – on the rolls who, you know, based on other state data, appear to be non-citizens ineligible to vote. And this didn't even address illegal aliens, right? This was just non-citizens, illegal residents, but non-citizens who were on the rolls. You know, there's an effort to go after that, and immediately it's condemned as, oh, this is just a campaign to kick good law-abiding, eligible voters off the rolls.
Right. It's what really it is it's an effort by the left to protect any maintenance of the list at all. So two Secretary of States ago, there was an effort, this is during Rick Perry's administration, to remove deceased voters from the voter rolls. And that got pushed back. Who, if you're dead, how can you be disenfranchised? It doesn't make any sense. It's just we have to protect. There can be no movement on making the lists better. And that's actually, if you go back and look at some of the emails and correspondence between the various agencies that are trying to conduct this list maintenance, you can see in those emails that they were cognizant of the fact that they might be disenfranchising people, and they were safeguarding against it. So in August of last year, Direct Action Texas and Grassroots America held a press conference to publicize the fact that we had tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of non-citizens registered to vote and voting. The Secretary of State's office, when they rolled out their list maintenance in January, had a substantially smaller number than the one that we went with. And that's because they firmed up the criteria that they used to build the list.
Right.
If they want to expand the criteria out and expand the circle to catch people who are registered who shouldn't be registered, they could do that. But they used the strongest possible matching criteria that they had to do this first run, and that was met with the virulent left.
Now, one of the criticisms, a lot of the narrative out there is, oh, well, the Secretary of State's office did a bad job with this. It was sloppy. It was they did it incorrectly, what have you. And kind of how do you address that?
Well, so first, this should have been going on for years, not just one.
This shouldn't
time.
Be a new thing that's rolled out. This should be something that's ongoing all the time. I guess that's a good point.
Right. So the first time that you do something, you're not going to do it, you know, perfectly. The first time you picked up a basketball or picked up a golf club or swung a baseball bat, you did not do it perfectly. It took time and it took practice. And you probably didn't have people sitting there yelling at you that you're a racist pig. David Whitley had that,
yeah.
Unfortunately. What we have also, in addition to that, are bad actors in the election administration. So there are election administrators and county clerks who, after this list maintenance exercise was released, pretended like they didn't know it was coming and didn't actually act in good faith.
There were, you know, pre-steps before they actually made the move to try and prepare these county clerks to actually be able to administer these things correctly.
Yeah, it was like 90% of the counties took part in training specifically related to this list maintenance activity, and the ones that didn't were teeny tiny counties that probably didn't have any, non-citizens.
they know all 92 people who are on the rolls personally.
Yep. Yep. So this, you have several things going on here. You have bad actors in the political sphere who are stopping efforts like this legislatively or by the Secretary of State's office, and then you also have election administrators who are slowing it down as well. And that's what we saw when Hope Andrade tried to remove the master death file back in 2012.
Yeah, so we've had several efforts. So we're currently stalled out on this. You're going to need somebody with the initiative and leadership to say, we've got to take another whack at this, because the lists are, you know, tainted currently with lots of people who shouldn't be eligible to vote. Now, from a reform effort, and we got a little bit of time here, basically the legislative reforms that we're moving in the session stalled out. So what needs to happen? What still is missing? What could people be calling on the governor to, you know, call a special session on that, you know, is really important to be done before really any election?
So this session, the marquee election reform legislation was Senate Bill 9 by Brian Hughes. It passed the Senate in mid-April and had plenty of time to move through the House. But that's where it bogged down. So you see the House get into mid-April. It takes a couple weeks for Dennis Bonin to figure out that he's got an important bill that he needs to assign to a committee. So it doesn't get to the House Elections Committee for 2 weeks. Then once it gets to the House Elections Committee, it sits for another 2 weeks before Chairman Stephanie Click gives it a hearing. Mm. And then there
it's
are
a typical stall game, you know, that goes on in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was bungled, to say the least. So, yeah, absolutely. A special session from Governor Abbott, specifically just reintroducing Senate Bill 9, would get us a long way down the road to reforming Texas's elections. One of the interesting things about Senate Bill 9, and then more broadly, one of the things that we see tactically that could be used, is in-person coaching of voters under the guise of assistance. And there were county DAs that came in and testified in front of the Senate about employers putting their arm around their employees and walking them into the polls and saying, "Oh yeah, you need assistance. Let me help you vote.
Let me help you vote." Well, what are they really doing? Helping them decide who's right to vote for.
Sure. Look over the shoulder and say, "Well, you know, are you sure you want to vote for that guy? Because this other guy is more pro education, or this other guy is going to, you know, help our community in this way or that way. We should vote for him."
Yeah, they have that sort of thing. Well, it's clear to me there's a lot of work left to be done both by the governor and his appointees, certainly by the legislature as well on these issues. I'm not comfortable with where we're at on our elections headed into 2020, and I really don't think Texans should be. You guys are the best resource out there that I know of on these issues, and a lot of great writing and information coming up on your website. Tell folks at home, how do they connect with Direct Action Texas? Where can they learn more about the work you are doing?
Sure. Yeah, visit us at directactiontx.com. There you'll find weekly writing on elections and election voter fraud. We're not comfortable either. We're going to be working hard during the interim to educate Texans about fraud, because we're so often told that it doesn't exist. And we're going to work to undermine the efforts of those who had committed in 2020.
Appreciate your work, Daniel.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Texas legislators aren't reading the bills they pass. Destin Sinsky tells us how we know that in this week's commentary.
This is the kind of resolution that a Texas governor would sign without thinking. So as a thinking governor, I think it best not to sign a factually incorrect resolution and instead to allow the legislature to consider this next session. That's the veto statement Governor Greg Abbott issued following his official rejection of House Concurrent Resolution 86, a bill naming the Bowie knife as the official knife of Texas. I'm Texas Scorecard Capitol correspondent Destin Sensky, and I'm bringing you this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Though we appreciate Governor Abbott's keen attention to detail, should the governor of the state of Texas have to serve as the fact-checker-in-chief in our legislative process? Unfortunately, because lawmakers don't do their job, it appears it is necessary for the governor to double and even triple-check their work. Lawmakers need to read the legislation they are voting on before they pass it on to the governor's desk, and these errors prove that simply isn't happening. They must do a better job writing bills and give due diligence to ensuring it is well thought out and constitutionally permissible. Every bill has the potential for unintended consequences. HCR 86 was a resolution by one North Texas state representative to make the Bowie knife the official state knife of Texas, given the historical context of the knife's usage and namesake in the Lone Star State. The issue was obviously a slam dunk, right? Indeed, the resolution unanimously passed both chambers of the legislature. However, because it contained an inaccuracy about the location of a battle where the knife was used by Bowie prior to joining the fight for Texas independence, Governor Greg Abbott vetoed the resolution so as to not include language misrepresenting the facts in state law. Fans of the Bowie knife will just have to wait until 2021. Of the 181 members of the legislature, in addition to the thousands of staffers filling those members' offices, did anybody take the time to read the bill and fact-check its language? Apparently not. That's just a resolution about a knife. Surely legislators know what's going into the substantive bills they pass, right? Wrong. Earlier this month, Abbott also vetoed a bill aimed at domestic violence because of a last-minute, non-germane amendment that was slipped in by the bill's author under everyone's noses. Unfortunately, the bill's author's good idea about domestic violence has been dragged down by a bad idea about radioactive waste, Abbott said. Someone slipped in an ill-considered giveaway to a radioactive waste disposal facility. Texas lawmakers are not doing their job when it comes to reading, or at least understanding, the legislation they're voting on in the Texas Capitol. Worse yet, these two pieces of legislation were straightforward and short, but with glaring problems. So how can Texans trust that lawmakers are taking the time to carefully examine bills like the Texas budget, school finance, or tax reform bills, each containing hundreds of pages of complicated changes to an already convoluted system of laws and appropriations? The answer is, they're not. Public servants should be transparent and accountable. They should also exercise fiscal restraint. Moreover, they should exercise prudence and pay careful attention to the laws they are passing, laws that have a direct impact on our individual liberties as Texans. We must demand better from our employees. I'm Destin Sensky, and this has been another Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all I've got for you this week. Join us back here next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.